Welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges and helps us learn our faith in a practical way. I'm Paul Androlonis.
I'm joined by
Philippe Siragi here
in the studio.
And
Jehu.
And Jehu is also here.
We should have a camera on Jehu.
He's going to be part of this
at some point. At some point, I think,
just
you know,
get the microphone ready,
we need to keep him in check.
No, actually,
he does whatever he wants behind over there, you know.
Sebastian's got to get the mic ready.
Yeah.
Jehu's never going to get the mic ready if it means that he's got to speak.
Yeah, let's get him in.
But yeah.
I think he could weigh in and say some interesting stuff.
I'm sure.
He doesn't want to do it.
It's good to have
whatever. It's fine.
We're not in a bubble. We got outside.
Yeah. I think I'm going to work on that. You know, I'm going to lobby for this.
You're going to what?
I'm going to lobby for him being on the show with us.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, that'd be fun. I like it. Change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, he needs to be ready for this. It's happening.
It's happening. We've got a lot of stuff going on in our world.
Yeah.
Got a lot of stuff happening.
And he could contribute.
He can contribute.
He just did.
That's his contribution. That's his contribution. I mean, anyway. I appreciate it.
It was nice. Apropos.
You know the timing? It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
So what are we talking about?
We've got a lot going on in our world today. This week, the discussion is about political aspect of our lives, especially given the season that we're in the United States with the election coming up in November, and all the different things that have been happening, not just, you know, now, but over the last several years in the landscape of the United States and in the,
world,
of viewpoints, political viewpoints, political stances, and the impact it's having in our world, in our relationships with people, in our conversations that we're having. And our discussion today will be centered around how do our Christian ethics relate or impact our political views, or how do those two things interact with one another, and how do we navigate the Christian ethics that we are learning and God is teaching us, and then also the political world that we exist in as well, in making decisions and voting and all the different things that go into the political realm in the world that we live in. So, what are your thoughts to get us started?
Well, maybe to give some context and some definition, maybe we could say, okay, so we know in John 17 that Jesus said that we're in the world, but we're not of the world, right? So that needs to be understood. And then we also are the light in the world, the salt of the earth. We're an ambassador for Christ. All these terminology seems to indicate that we can't just live on this realm below, right?
Yes.
We have to have some thoughts that come from God, as we see in Isaiah 55:8-11. God's thoughts are not our thoughts. So does God have something to say about the world we're in today? Mm. And does God care about the world we're in today? So that's one aspect of the context. The other one is, I think, which is the most important for me, is in what do I hope? Right. Do I hope in politics? Like, you and I live in the States, you know, and so does Jehu, just to mention him one more time.
Just in case.
And do we trust in Washington? If you live in Paris, in France, do you trust in Paris? If you live anywhere in the world, do you trust in your capital city politicians to make a difference? Or do we put ultimately our trust in God? And that is very interesting, because some cultures, more than others, really have an integrated view of their faith in politics. And I think it's the case in the States, where people really seem to indicate in their mind that this used to be a Christian country. It's not a Christian country per se anymore. Mm-hmm. I think people have a hard time accepting that and a hard time understanding what it means. And I think today, hopefully, we're going to help. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't pray that a country would become a Christian country again. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if I ask God and he doesn't give it to me, am I going to work into politics to make it happen regardless? Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the point. That's the tension we're discussing. And the other point, it's maybe for those of you who don't understand what ethics is another word for, if you want to loose about it, for moral standards. Like, as Christians, we have convictions about maybe things that we see in the Bible that we would like to see in the world. And when you look at the Bible and then look at the society today, and especially in the last 5-10 years in the United States, you see a lot of departing from the gospel. And what I think could be helpful is realizing the departing of the gospel is an indication of where the culture is. So if we want the So to start the conversation like right away, I would say there is two ways we can address the issue and look at the issue ourselves. We're going to fix this mm-hmm. by changing politics, or we're going to fix this by asking God to bring a revival in our country. One is God will do the work. The other one, we're going to trust in ourselves to get the work done. So we're going to vote for the right candidate. We're going to vote for, and there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. If we understand it in the proper limit of what they can do and what my hope should be. So again, I was discussing this earlier and I say I'll just give you an example and I'll stop there and then we can start the conversation. But, there's two ways. One example for me is alcohol is a big problem in many Western world and actually in many places in the world. Like in the States in the late 20s and 30s, because alcohol was such a problem, then we had years of what you called in your history prohibition. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to regulate the issues with alcoholism. And the other one, it's more complex than that. I get it, but I'm just trying to make a point. Yeah. And on the other hand, you have revivals in places where alcohol is also a problem, in Scotland and other areas. And when you see the result in the outcome is there was no regulations and rules and political changes in Scotland, but there was a revival and the bars just closed down. And alcohol didn't become a problem anymore because the alcohol is a byproduct of the absence of Christ in society. Mm. And versus in the United States where prohibitions came, then it created actually an underground market for that created the new mob. And now you have mobsters and you know, trying to killings. And then that's where Al Capone, the famous, you know, gangster, became famous around the same time.
Yeah.
So you see the point that we're making is every time we try to enforce value on people who don't have Christ, it doesn't stick. When people are transformed, and then the value stays because it's from within. And it's exactly what we believe as Christians. You and I are in the church where we believe the finished work mm-hmm. and we believe that God does the work in our lives, right? Philippians 1:6, he starts the works, he finishes it. But if I think I can change the world around me by enforcing a Christian agenda on non-Christian people, then I'm actually being legalist because I don't give the foundation that allows change to happen. So if I view my political move as this,
yeah.
then I don't understand what my role is on this earth.
Yeah, that's that idea of like how the change is going to happen. What is going to make a difference?
Yep.
These are all things that are noble and they are impactful things to be thinking about, especially as it relates to our country, as it relates to our future. And people say, you know, for my children, for the future of democracy, for the future of this or for the future of that. And those are those ideas and those thoughts are important for us to think about. But again, what are we hoping in? What is our what is our desire for? And what is our foundation on all of these different things? Mm-hmm, is my foundation on an identity that I have or a party that I relate to or I am a part of or registered as? Or is it a viewpoint or a standard that I hold to or something that I'm for or something that I'm against? Mm-hmm. What are the things that are foundational in my ethics and that are foundational in my politics and those things? And is it the same? Or am I one way ethically and a different way politically or whatever the case is? And what we're saying is those things are kind of adjacent to one another or overlapping one another in a real way. And we were talking about this, I think it applies in this situation, but at the end of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7, there's four verses where it talks about, I'll just read them here.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and it was, and great was its fall. And in these verses, I've been thinking about this for like a couple of months, just thinking about this idea in these verses 24, verses 25 and verses 27, there's three things that are in this situation, in this story that are similar between both of the people that built their house. Mm-hmm. It's raining, it's flooding, and it's windy
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
for both of them. And I liken that to this situation where in our ethics and in our politics, we could say, man, I wish it wasn't raining over here and it was not raining over there on that other person that's mm-hmm. having success or whatever. It's like, but the reality is it's raining and it's windy mm-hmm. and it's flooding mm-hmm. on everybody.
Yes.
And we can try to think that our situation is worse. We could think that our situation is, when we look introspectively, we could say, man, everything just keeps flooding in. The wind won't stop. The rain won't stop. The reality is it's rainy and it's windy and it's flooding for both sides of the political system, for mm-hmm. everybody in the world. There is something that's happening and there's something that is we're all struggling with, or we're all going through it, using that term. We all have these things happening in our lives. Nothing is, but what is my foundation that I'm standing on, and the foundation that my life is based on mm-hmm. in all these things? How do I know what decision to make? It's rainy and windy, and this foundation that, you know, the foolish man built his house on the sand and the wise man built his house on the rock. And as you were saying, is my hope in something that is shifting, mm-hmm. something that is going to change, something that is temporary, that is going to go away, or something that will be removed in years or however long? Or is my foundation is something that is eternal, something that is real, something that is true, and something that I will never get to the bottom of, which maybe that's what's something that's difficult for some people. Mm-hmm. How can my foundation be on something that yeah. I can never fully know? It was like, in my mind, that's better than knowing the end of the thing that I have, my foundation in my life mm-hmm. is, because I know when it's going to fail. If I don't know the end of God and who he is, and I wanting to get to know him more and more so one day I will see him, that gives me more confidence in him in a way, because I won't know the signs of when he will fail, because he will never fail. Mm-hmm. So what is our hope in? What is our foundation in, mm-hmm. in our ethics and in our politics? That's an important thing, because the reality is the grass isn't always greener on the other side. The rain is falling. The wind is blowing for everybody in all these situations. Yeah. Bad things are happening. Good things are happening in different situations. But we can be very focused on ourselves mm-hmm. and miss the other things that are happening, or downplay the things that are happening in other people's lives, or the other side of the aisle, or however you want to put that, because of my introspective viewpoint of my life and what I'm doing, what my decisions are, and what is the foundation of that. So,
yeah, and I think I understand, you know, we understand what most people would realize. Okay, well, I leave this country, whatever the country you're living in. I see some people just arriving from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we see people, you know, from other countries. Actually, if you are from a different country, you're listening, it would be interesting to know. But the point is, whatever our context is, there is one truth that is across every border, is my hope is in Christ. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I want to say something that might shock some people, because, you know, we love, you know, like I come from a free country, of course, you know, in many ways, it's as rich as you would see in the United States, because it's the fifth economy in the world. It's a small country compared to the United States. There's 65 million people. It's France. But on the other hand, you know, what's interesting in that way is like the form of democracy we enjoy. Could I defend this form of government biblically? I can't. There's no democracy in the Bible in one anyway. So, yeah. So the point is, what I'm known is what what we have as a promise is we are in the fallen world. Mm. So any freedom or any advantage that I am enjoying, that we are enjoying this country, the United States is a great place to live in many, many ways. There's a lot of understanding freedom and individual rights and all these things we're enjoying, but none of those things are defensible biblically per se. I could claim as a free man that, you know, that this is the way God intended things to be. I don't see that. There's, you know, there's nothing said about democracy in the Bible. People say, well, democracy did not exist at the time. It did, because all the major Greek cities were democracies, like Athens and Sparta and all these places. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to make a point besides the fact that we have to understand that circumstances are different. You can be in North Korea, you can be in the United States, and you can yeah. still have hope in Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And though we can influence our society by voting, which is, I think, is a good thing. I'd rather be in a moral environment, so I'm not tempted by all kinds of things that make me fall. But on the other hand, God is less interested in the political environment we're in versus the the spiritual environment we're in. And the point basically is, I'm going to read something from Martin Luther, who came up with this concept. Well, he didn't come up, but he explained this concept of the understanding of the two kingdoms, right? So you have the kingdom in heaven, you have the kingdom of the earth.
Yes.
And they will only match when Christ comes for the millennium. And neither you, I, or anyone is supposed to work for the coming back of Christ in the sense, so I'm going to vote somebody in, so that that will usher in Christ. This is not how it works. So he said, well, this is the kingdom, right? And this is what he says also. But you have to take heed and first fill the world with Christians before you attempt to rule it, the world, in a Christian and evangelical manner. Meaning the mistake we can make as Christians in not realizing that my goal is not to rule the world like if it was a Christian world, but to make sure that people get saved before we rule it in a Christian way. Mm. Right? It's just like saying, well, you know, like I don't need to teach the gospel or preach the gospel at GGC, a Christian school. We just have to have Christian rules in it. Hmm. No, if those kids follow the rules but they don't find Christ, then they will leave for good because they only find his legalism. So the mistake we make, I think the good thing is realizing I can have, as a citizen of the country, I can have a political influence, and I want to be able to exercise that right, absolutely, because this is a God-given right in the context I'm in. On the other hand, if I think this will fix the issue of morality, or that I wish that my country would impose a Christian morals on non-Christian people, that is exactly what happened in the 80s and 90s. And that's why there's a big shift of culture, I think, in the United States between people that were, because, okay, I'm going to say something that interesting for us. So obviously I have an accent, so I'm not from here. The first time I came here in the States, I was 17 years old. I was doing like not a world tour, but I was traveling around, you know, many places. And what's surprising to me, coming from an atheistic country like France, is how many people say, God bless you, you know, or whatever. You know, God was a big part of the conversation. I'm talking in 1989, you know, a few years ago. And that was surprising to me. Everybody's nice, you know, everything. Yeah. And then, you know, and now it's different. You know, like if you say Merry Christmas, you're insulting people. You should say Happy Holidays. How did that happen? Right? Yeah. From 1990 to 2020, roughly, you know, in 30 years, how did the whole shift happen in one generation? And I believe, and that's just me, because people were under a moral standard but didn't have the heart to follow Christ. That's why the culture changes so fast. My country has been, in France, has been a secular country for more than 100 years. We voted the clear separation of church and state in 1905 in France, where there was like a violent separation. You know, there was fights and there was, you know, kinds of things. So it was 120 years ago. And France was like way more secular than the United States until 20 years ago. And now France, if you look at the French newspapers, look at the United States, what is wrong with those guys? They're way further. It went too fast. And for me, it's a clear indication that there is no, there's no Christian foundation. There was a moral foundation that actually failed. Because if you and I follow Christ's principle without being Christians, at some point, this is not going to work for us. So if we think that the solution to fix the issues in a country like here or other places where we used to be a Christian country is to reinforce Christian principles, we're going to go back to 30, 40 years ago, and we're going to have the same problems down the road. The only things that will fix hearts is Jesus. And if I understand that, like as a foundation, then I can be involved in politics and I can vote. I can hope for a better world. If I have children, I really want to be able to see my children live in an environment where they don't have to be questioned all the time. If I have to put them in public school, I don't have to hear stupid things that I hear sometimes. That is completely understandable. But if this is my hope, then I think I'm missing the mark. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does. It does make sense. And I was just going to read 2 Corinthians chapter 4.
As you should. As you should.
It says in verse 15, "For all things are for your sakes, that grace, having spread through the many, may cause thanksgiving to abound to the glory of God. Therefore, we do not lose heart, Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. Our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Mm-hmm. We do not look at the things that are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Like going back to like what you were saying, like the hope that I have and what am I hoping is something that is seen. It is something, is it something that is temporary? Is mm-hmm. it something that is, or is it something that is eternal? Something that is unseen. And like in the perishing of the outward man, like thinking about, you were talking about different societies mm-hmm. or different contexts mm-hmm. that exist. How much of an impact can the society or the political structure of the location where I'm in, how much can that impact my spiritual life? Mm-hmm. And I think it can impact it fairly significantly mm-hmm, depending mm-hmm. on what the constraints are, what the situation is. You know, we have the communist examples. We mm-hmm. have the pilgrims and those Puritans who had to leave in mm-hmm. order to have their religious freedom, which is the foundation of our country and in general, them leaving for religious reasons and coming here to be able to worship God freely. So I think that for us to think that the politics don't impact the faith of people and the in those environments and those contexts is, mm-hmm. is not, they are, it is impactful, but it shouldn't be impactful in that I am forsaking my faith in order to appease the political structure or the thing that I am. If my faith is in something that is eternal, if my mm-hmm. faith is in something that I believe that is true, then the suffering that I encounter cannot be compared to the glory, as I just read in 2 Corinthians. Mm-hmm. And we in the United States can be very familiar or take for granted the freedoms that we have in our political system and also religiously, in that there are people that are in other countries around the world where just having a church and talking about God mm-hmm. and telling people about Christ is punishable offense for going to jail or even some cases executed.
Yes.
And we are over here saying, you know, we need to, you know, have, you know, remove these religious things from, or we're like acting this like utopian idea where if only this was happening and only that was happening. But if those things are temporary mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and they could perish away, whatever solutions I determine or develop, or if it's a political solution or some other social solution that I develop without God, then it's not going to have the impact that I mm-hmm. think it's going to. And we've seen those things come and go in the different times of history that we've lived in, where people have had ideas and ways that they could solve something. And with God or without God, those things tend to fizzle out. They tend to be maybe a Band-Aid on mm-hmm. something that needs more healing with a transformation or a transplant type of situation yeah. where from the outside in, changing my behavior, as you were saying, about a moral behavior change as far as the Christian faith or a religious adjustment of behavior is not going to change the hearts of people mm-hmm. and keep them ethically in a positive place. Mm-hmm. But changing the heart of somebody is going to have an impact on the outside of them.
Absolutely.
And how they impact from their heart outward, not the other way. And that's something that I think is important for us to think about, because there is this idea that maybe if I wasn't in this environment that I was raised in, that I grew up in, then I wouldn't be the way that I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not my fault that I steal. It's not yeah. my fault that I deal drugs. It's not my fault that I, and in some ways there are those situations where you're in an environment and it's difficult to see any way out, to see anything out. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with, in some cases, where we look to something that is temporary mm-hmm. to solve an eternal problem,
mm-hmm.
where if only we had more money, it would be better. If only this or that, we could get, kids could be out of those bad situations and mm-hmm. live a better life. You know, whatever that looks like,
yeah.
based on whatever criteria we mm-hmm, determine. Mm-hmm. But those things are not going to solve the problem of the eternity that's in our hearts that needs to be filled by God.
Absolutely.
And I think when we realize that, when we look at those different situations where, yes, somebody is in a bad situation, but there are people who have made it out of those situations and have had success in their life and have had their lives transformed. Mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, it's not based on somebody swooping in and giving them $1 million so they can go live somewhere else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, it's because their heart's been changed by something deeper, something mm-hmm. greater. I've seen it a lot of times with the work that I've done here in Baltimore with basketball. I referee basketball here in Baltimore City. And I see these kids that are here that are playing basketball, they're playing sports. It's a way for them to get out of a bad situation. Mm-hmm. Baltimore City is known for it to be a crime, for crime and for drug abuse and for different negative connotations that mm-hmm. exist. The Wire, the HBO series, The Wire did not help us in that connotation. Yeah. But that's the reality of the world and the city that we live in. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people that are hurting, people that are struggling. And these kids, they play sports, basketball, football, whatever. I know from experience with basketball where these kids, they see an opportunity for them to get out. They see an opportunity for them to leave, not only for them to get out, for them to help their family. Mm-hmm. And they play sports and they do really well and they practice and they train and they do all these things and they go to a private school. Maybe they get a scholarship to a private school or they get a scholarship to a college, and they're using this as their golden ticket to get out. And in a lot of cases, some of those kids, the pressure that they place on themselves to get out and mm-hmm. have this be their ticket causes them to have issues with the environments that they're in, with their coaches, with their teammates, with their life. And then they go and they play, you know, maybe at a college or play somewhere else. But a lot of cases, they end up right back where they were mm-hmm. because they were looking for something temporary to solve an eternal problem yeah. in their heart. And sports can be something that kids can use that as their way to get out, as their way to be removed from that thing. But the reality is that it's something deeper than mm-hmm. just you know, what money can solve or what success can solve or any of those things. Yeah. It's got to be something more than that. And I yeah. think when we look to solve eternal problems with temporary solutions, that's when we get, we have the difficulties, when we see the failures, when we see the depravity, we see the issues that exist in ethically and morally, because mm-hmm. now I like, well, that didn't work. Well, now I have no hope. Mm-hmm. I'm just back where I started yeah. and I miss my chance. I miss my shot. And how much more am I defeated at that point? And that's just an example, but I think it's a real one in that whatever, fill in the blank mm-hmm. with whatever you mm-hmm. want. I have mm-hmm. an opportunity to get a good job, or I have an opportunity to travel and go somewhere, and how much weight and how much pressure that puts on mm-hmm. me as an individual to make that happen when there is a freedom and there is a peace and there is an opportunity for God to change my heart
yeah.
and then therefore change my interaction with the environment around mm-hmm. me as a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great point you're making. I think it applies in so many things, in the sense that as we can be in a situation, and I think as Christians, we're bothered by the world the way it is. Like, there's no reason why we should look at the world and be okay with it. That's not what we're saying, you know. But if we're saying is that as Christians, if we don't bring, it's just like you don't light up a light and put it under a bushel.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. We don't that.
Yeah.
But the point, if I think that I will help fix people with a social gospel, or if I, you know, compete to, instead of bringing Christ, or with a Christian agenda for politics instead of bringing Christ, then I am putting my distinctive light under a bushel. Because mm-hmm. what people, you know, solutions for political issues, everybody has one. Mm-hmm. But who has Christ? Mm. So if as a Christian I am in this arena of the political scene where I'm trying to fix political issues without bringing Christ, then I'm not being an ambassador anymore, right? I'm not trying to be like, imagine I'm a French citizen, I'm sent to a country to be an ambassador. And when I get there, I'm so, well, the best way for me to fix the issues over here, which is not my role, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to run for office. No, you don't belong here. You know, yeah, this is not, you know, I'm going to run for office. That's, you know, I'm going to enforce, you know, on things, the issues that I know to be the right one. And then, you know, this doesn't work. So I'm not saying again that Christians shouldn't run for office. This is great if you've got Liz Yu there locally or, you know, like it could be as small as the HOA board of your mm-hmm. neighborhood, you know, all the way to the presidency. And I think these things are great. And again, we rather see moral politicians and people in place that love God and show Christ in their endeavors. That is a great way to showcase our mm-hmm. faith. But trying to fix issues but not bringing Christ into the arena, it's a big mistake we can make. And mm-hmm. I think in one way, like Acts 5, when Peter is asked the question to shut up or go to jail, he asked a very simple question. Which is better, obey men or obey God? And I think this is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So when I have a chance, like for example, like in 2020 where there were shutdowns and churches closed because of COVID, our church had to make a decision. And the decision hopefully, you know, should I mean, hopefully shouldn't be made politically, but of course it weighs in. But the final decision at the end for us as leaders in the church has nothing to be with motivated with, oh, the First Amendment of the Constitution allows me to. Yes, of course it does. But then if that's the argument, then the First Amendment doesn't apply to Germany. So how do we do this? Mm-hmm. The argument really is very simple, is that we have to assemble. This is a biblical mandate. So who are we? And number two, okay, because in the conversations with the authorities, okay, but you can't assemble. We have to assemble. So it's our right. We have to. And then let's find a way to do it, you know, safely. Okay. Okay, well then, if people don't wear masks in the church, we have to kick them out. And no, we don't do church discipline based on political mandates. Mm-hmm. We do church discipline, which is kicking somebody out of the church in a due process because of sin. And that's not a sin. Oh, okay, we understand. So then there's a compromise and we move on. But it was not politically motivated. It was the fact that who are we going to obey? Men? Hmm. But on the other hand, we can do things in wisdom. And I think that's one example, I think, which is a very good example. Where when Peter in Acts 5 was made, you know, was pushed to making a decision, well, you know, just render to Caesar what's Caesar's and render to God what's God's, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good way to think. Almost next month, like in November, there's the big four election that happens every 4 years in the United States, you know, with the presidential elections and other elections as well. But yeah, I think do we have senators also running? Yeah, we have some senators. Do we have some governors maybe mm-hmm. also? Like, it's a big election for the country.
Yeah.
But then my motivation has to be, I'm thinking with God, you know, mm-hmm. and also not being so passionate in thinking that this is God's candidate. Hmm. I cannot think this way.
Yeah.
This is a guy, this is a girl, whoever, you know, is running for president. They have their realm of influence. And if they have a walk with God, they may make a difference. But at the end of the day, the only thing that will fix our problems is massive conversions, massive, you know, revival. And that's how God will make a difference. And if I don't understand this, I might misplace my hope in Washington or Paris or whatever, you know. And that's why I think we have to understand. And the connection between ethics and politics, this is exactly this. Do I want the country I'm living in or where I'm a citizen of to be morally upward? Yes. Mm-hmm. But does the end justify the means? Absolutely not. Hmm. I have to be able to live my Christian life. And actually, we've been promised trials. We've been promised oppositions. We've been promised, you know, temptations in this world. So, I have to have that, like, you know, in my mind as well. On the other hand, when I hear people say, well, you know, how our policies are hurting people and families, that we have to care about. Mm-hmm. That we have to care about, of course, you know.
Yeah, and that's recognizing those different things, recognizing what your foundation is, recognizing the who your hope is in, obviously will help you to shape, like you were saying, kind of like everything that we're doing, we're framing it and we're viewing it through the lens of what God has said and what we know about God. Mm-hmm. If I don't know a lot about God, then what I see in politics is not going to be, there's not going to be a lens for me to look through. If I don't have God in my life, if I don't have the truth of who he is. And maybe one thing that'd be interesting to, you know, kind of chat about is just like all the noise that exists around politics, especially currently as we're leading up to, how do we handle the noise? How do we handle the conversation? How do we handle the things that we're hearing and the things that are in our face, the things that we aren't looking for maybe, and they're just happening. And especially in the day and age that we live in with technology and the algorithms and confirmation bias and all these different things that, oh, you want to watch another video about this and another video about that. And it kind of just gets, you get ramped up mm-hmm. in this. And I think it's an important factor in us thinking about ethics and politics is like, how much am I feeding into the noise of the machine of the political structure? And do I recognize that the pull that it has on me, and in some cases maybe my willing following of this and being a part of this thing, or am I unplugging from that environment and thinking with God as it relates to these different things in my life? Because especially in the 24-hour news cycle that we live in, there's always a video, there's always a podcast, there's always something that I can listen to that's mm-hmm. going to affirm the things that I'm thinking or make me frustrated because they're the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And I think in these things we have like the relational element that we have to consider in the ethics and in the politics. Like the point of us is, the relationship that we are designed for and interacting as human beings, and the reality that relationship is what transforms the lives of mm-hmm. people,
absolutely.
Not dictatorship or not telling people what to do. And we've said that already as it relates to Christianity, but mm-hmm. in the same way, politically, if I'm unwilling to have a conversation and to disagree and to be able to discuss or talk about the ways that we disagree and why I believe the way that I am, then how do we have any hope of having any type of unity or having any type of interaction with one another when it's just division and throwing barbs back and forth at one another? And we have on our street, right when we come out of our street, there's two houses there. And one of them is clearly on one side and one of them is clearly on the other side. And they all have their flags and they all have their, and they, it got so, I don't, I'm wondering what it's going to be like over the next month, because it gets to the point where they start like putting signs up to one another about why, how dumb they are to be. Yes. Billy. And I'm like, this is like a perfect example of like the opposite of what we were designed for. The opposite of what God wants for us is like not to push each other away from each other, but to be drawn closer to Christ mm-hmm. and in being drawn closer to him, closer to one another. But that requires us being able to have a conversation mm-hmm. and be able to close my mouth and listen mm-hmm. and actually listen and not just wait to speak what I want to say in all of these different conversations. And I'm not necessarily a political person and have these types of conversations all the time, because like we were saying, this is like something that is temporary, something that is, you know, whoever gets elected president, they're only it's not a solution that's going to be an eternal solution, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
And the laws and the changes that happen. And I'm not downplaying like the reality of some of the things that are happening and the importance of this, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, in the history of the universe.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for us to be able to disagree, to be able to have conversations where we can talk about why we believe what we believe. Yeah. And that gives us the opportunity to bring Christ into the conversation.
Yes.
But if there is no conversation, then there's no opportunity for Christ to come into it.
Absolutely.
Right? There's no way for me to talk about Christ if I'm not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
Like I know what I believe and I have my belief, but if I'm not willing to like at least hear somebody out or to talk with them, and who knows what the situation is. And we don't even get to that point where we can hear the conversation on both sides. And it's just difficult to watch and difficult to like hear those types of conversations and to see them happening, especially on the scale that they are in the world that we live in. This is on Facebook and YouTube and all that stuff. And the debates and the comments that go back and forth on those forums is just like, it hurts me. And when I see those different things,
of course.
Okay, can we have a cup of coffee and like talk about like why you're so mad at me and why you're using all caps when you're commenting on my Facebook post or whatever it is? It's like let's relate to one another.
Yeah.
And let's connect with one another, and that's the way that we can have to, like I said, bring Christ into the conversations that we're having. And maybe bringing Christ in is just going to make it worse, but that's if that's a big part of my life, then that's going to be part of the conversation, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the point being, I think it's just saying what's, I mean, for me, it's like, I'm not like very active on social media, but I know, and some Christians that I mean, I don't want to say too much because people feel targeted, but it deeply bothers me. And it's just me. I'm just one guy here, so I have the mic, so I'm sharing my issues with it, and maybe Jehu is going to fire me at the end of this show because I had to bring him up one more time.
He almost
finished that. I thought, you know, he's
Jehu,
you know, there.
Jehu uses all caps.
He uses all caps. Like, I hate that. Anyway, so I think some of the people that I know on social media, they share their political views way more than they share anything about Christ. What it says to me, this matters more to you than anything else. And I think one point, and I know not you, but you are ministering with young people, but if you guys out there minister to young people, you have to understand something very important here. that when you put emphasis on political views and issues, especially during election times, what you're sending as a message is these points that I'm making on political issues are part of my core convictions as a Christian. That's what makes you a believer. So, like the blood of Christ, the Trinity, the inspiration of scriptures, and you have to be of such political party. If you're not in this line, like my political line is as important to me as my theological line. And that is a huge mistake because younger people have to process the way they see the world with their faith, and it takes time. So if you would ask me what I believed when I was 18 versus what I'm believing now, there would be, I look back at my conviction at this time thinking, oh my God, at least that was super immature. Mm-hmm. And so today they are looking at issues, and you have to understand something about the context. The generation of the maybe 25 and younger, maybe almost 30 and younger, they have to face a world in this country, United States, that none of the generations before had to before. Because now imagine all the things that changed the last 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. The way we see love and marriage, you know, the family, and the way we see the Christian agenda. Like, as I was joking about, you know, you can't see Merry Christmas, you're offending people, you know, have mm-hmm. to see your Happy Holidays, you know, and all these things. So now, for the first time in generations, Americans, young Americans, are living as Christians in a world that is hostile to their convictions. So if you draw the line politically, you're excluding them because they haven't processed everything yet. Hmm. So where we should need to draw the line is with Bible verses and Bible truth, but not with political issues. And I think sometimes, like, for example, what I did when I talked to young people, I said, I'm going to tell you something very interesting for me. Everything I believe in the way I see the world today and the going away from the gospel, I believe my convictions on abortion, gay marriage, all these things are there because I'm a Christian. If I was not a Christian, I can bet you everything I have, I would be on the upper, because I wanted to be a good person, because mm-hmm. that would be the only thing I can look forward to. Mm-hmm. So that means that what I believe is forged in my convictions of the Bible is true. So we have to be careful with that. And I see we're running out of time, but I think it's a warning. You know, we have to be careful not mixing up our political convictions with our theological convictions. Otherwise, we might send them the wrong message.
Well, because like in that, having those things coincide with one another, then the opposing view of whatever that political viewpoint that I have, mm-hmm. I start to demonize.
Yes.
Like, okay, they're theologically off and they're not of God because yes. they are part of this party or part of this thing. And now, yeah. So I think like that's what we want to be, not putting things that should not be part of our theological or part of our foundational elements for our life in something that is temporary, yes. something that is not going to, not meant to be there,
yeah.
not something that is meant to be there mm-hmm. and have that impact the way that we see the world ethically or politically. And I think it is important, as you were saying, because a lot of young people have like questions of, and I think generationally we have these different things where I was reading this book on morality, as I mentioned before, and they have like some moral foundation theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of that mm-hmm. or ever talked about that, but just there's like, they use five different categories for the moral foundation that people have mm-hmm. and different people value different things. There's different tastes. There's different things that people care about more than others. And so I'll just go through them real quick before we wrap up here, mm-hmm. but The one is care versus harm, mm-hmm. fairness versus cheating, loyalty and betrayal, authority and subversion, and sanctity and degradation. So like some people are more caring about the individual, caring about the difficulties that somebody is in, and some other people are more concerned with obeying authority and honoring authority or subverting authority in mm-hmm. whatever case it is. So these five foundational elements are something that we need to think about in the way that we're interacting with one another mm-hmm. too. And having that, viewing that through the lens of scripture, like there are aspects of the political structure that, you know, go against and things that are happening that are going against what God has said and what is true of the Bible. And if I'm standing on that foundation, then I can recognize those things and call them out and be able to have a conversation and discussion with somebody about it. Because if I know the truth sets me free. I don't have to, I may not have to say something. I may not have to, you know, dictate to somebody and force my, the truth on them. The gospel is controversial enough and it can change the hearts and minds of people in and of itself without me being the one that is, you know, hammering it into somebody's brain, somebody's mind. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to understand that it's one thing that I do see in the class that I teach ethics. I don't need to add seasoning to the gospel in the sense that it is the salt already.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and the point being, is that the gospel is, you said, you know,
controversial.
Controversial. I would say, for me, I use the word offensive enough.
Offensive.
Okay. You know, it is offensive enough. I don't have to add the attitude towards it. You know, it's already offensive nowadays. So why would I be more offensive, you know, than the gospel? Because I think the gospel is offensive enough in the sense it is a good way offensive. Mm-hmm. It has to rub us the wrong way for us to be able to shaken, you know, from our fallen state. So
amen
to that.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe to the Grace Hour Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, all the different places. Be sure to check out the rest of our episodes this week. Have a good one.
Amen.